I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. Today we sued the state of Washington for refusing us press access to the House of Representatives. Plus, local girls who are speaking out against having boys in their spaces are now facing threats and harassment. Plus, crazy video of student protesters beating up a mom. I don't even know what to say about it. We'll discuss that and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. That's UndividedPod.com. You click on the banner that says support the show. Sign up. You'll feel great about yourself. And then while you're there, you can also shop our merch store. You know, put a bumper sticker on your car. Make sure everyone knows that you have more common sense than they do. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. We tried to avoid this. I have better things to do than spend my time fighting with the state of Washington over access to the House of Representatives, which I would maybe need five times the entire legislative session. But here we are. This morning, with the help of the Citizen Action Defense Fund, we have filed suit against the Washington State House of Representatives and the Capitol Correspondents Association. CADIF filed that lawsuit not only on behalf of me, but on behalf of Jonathan Cho and on behalf of Ari Hoffman. All of us in the last couple of weeks have had our press pass denied by Democrats who control the State House of Representatives. The denial of that press pass makes it so that we cannot sit with the rest of the, can't sit with the cool kids on the floor of the House, can't cover the floor of the House from the press table, can't have access to the wings on the Democratic side. And also, if there is a press conference in the wings that House Democrats are having, we would need to ask for special access to be able to go to that, which is absurd because the press pass is supposed to be able to give us access to that. So it's this whole ordeal. Again, filed this morning on behalf of us by the Citizen Action Defense Fund. And we name a few people in the lawsuit. So, of course, just more broadly, the Washington State House of Representatives. Unfortunately, state law prohibits us from bringing a direct action against Speaker of the House, Lori Jenkins. So we have to sue the House of Representatives as a whole. Also, the chief clerk, Bernard Dean, who sent us the official denial. And then more broadly, the legislature, the state of Washington, and the Washington State Capitol Correspondents Association. Now, I would have loved to leave out the Capitol Correspondents Association and Jerry Kornfield, who is a reporter who helps sort of vet people for press passes. And I would have loved to leave them out because last year, after we threatened to sue, they gave up control of press passes, handed them over to lawmakers, and we were left to believe that they weren't thwarting our access anymore, only to come to find out that the Democrats in the House are using reporters in the Capitol Correspondents Association to continue to vet and deny press passes. So unfortunately, they have to be part of this action as well. And we'll see what happens here. You know, it's a short session. So CADIF seems pretty confident that we can get some sort of hearing immediately on this before the session is over that would, you know, give us press passes in the meantime. I think one of the frustrating things about this is I believe Democrats wanted this. I believe Democrats wanted to push this issue to the point where we sued over it. I mean, what do they have to lose? And really nothing, right? I mean, it's your money that they're going to, unfortunately, I hate that part of it. It's your money that they're going to use to defend the state of Washington in this case, to try to keep me from having a press pass. It's your money. And if they lose, well, hell, that's your money too. And so they're more than happy to take this to court, and we really don't have any other choice. So thankfully, I mean, the Citizen Action Defense Fund is funded with donations from generous Washingtonians who support the work they're doing. And so thankfully, we don't have to come out of pocket for our defense in this case. But it's ridiculous because whenever you sue a public entity, like we went through the lawsuit that's still ongoing with the city of Seattle that's been happening for like 2.5 years now, unfortunately, it's taxpayer money. And that's why they don't care to do things that are wrong, clearly a violation of the First Amendment, because they're like, well, you know, it's not coming out of our own pockets. I can't sue Lori Jenkins. So we'll see what happens here. But we are adamant that we're going to see this through because times are a-changing. They're using very old, outdated rules to deny me access because I take a position on no boys and girls sports. Meanwhile, you've got editorial, you've got, you know, the Seattle Times and its editorial board taking positions on all sorts of things. You've got the Newspapers Association literally sending out email blast to its members, urging them to advocate for a bill that would give them tax breaks and would give them taxpayer-funded grants. So look, times are changing. New media is taking over. Old media is dying off. I think everybody should be able to have access, if they engage professionally in the dissemination of information to the public, whether that's a YouTuber or a podcaster or an opinion writer or a blogger or whatever it is. If you can go down to Olympia and you can basically behave yourself, you ought to be able to have a press pass. So at the same time that this is happening, and it's just so rich, isn't it? I mean, if they didn't have hypocrisy, they'd have nothing else. There was an article in the Seattle Times in the editorial section. Headline: Speak up for local news, Washington. Oh my God, I'm sorry. You don't hate these people enough. You don't. Used to hate when Donald Trump called him the enemy of the American people, but now I totally understand what he's talking about, because this article isn't about me. It's not about Jonathan Cho. It's not about Ori Hoffman. It's not about, hey, you know, we need to stand up for everyone in the press because that's what's best for the citizens. No, they want you to speak up for them. Speak up for the survival of the Seattle Times and Legacy News while they actively play a part in keeping us out of the press corps in Olympia. So this editorial centers around a bill we discussed last week, Senate Bill 5400. This is a bill that would support local newsrooms by providing grants so that they can hire reporters. $28 million in grants per year, okay? And of course, oh my gosh, well, let me just be clear. I would never want one of those grants. We don't need one of those grants. We're funded by people who watch and listen to our show and find value in it. So why would I force other people to fund me? If I'm doing a good job and I'm producing something that has value, people will pay for it. If I'm not, then people won't. And we won't be around for very long. And that is the reality of what the Seattle Times is dealing with. So as they're denying my press pass because I advocate for things, I advocate for certain policy prescriptions to problems, and while the Seattle Times is looking down upon me for doing that, they're sending their president to Olympia to testify in support of this bill that would give them money.
Good afternoon. I'm Alan Fisco, president and CEO of the Seattle Times Company. As we all know, the state of the media organizations across the state is in a significant state of decline. Since 2004, we've lost a third of our newspapers across the state. Cool. We have to do everything we can to protect our journalism jobs that remain and provide incentives to grow the number of journalists in our state. And Senate Bill 5400 will do just that. The modest surcharge on some tech companies that we talked about would be a drop in the bucket compared to the billions that they've made, many of which from our news content that they've used without any compensation. Many news organizations would benefit from the package of this bill, from the passage, including the Seattle Times. One benefit is save jobs, but the real winners are Washington residents. No. And informed citizenry is the foundation of our democracy, and that's what we try to do every single day. This will protect jobs. We strongly support Senate Bill 5400 and hope that you advance it out of committee for give us a chance to sustain and grow our vital community service missions. Thank you very much.
Oh my gosh, where do I even start? The hypocrisy, it's insane. You've got the president of the Seattle Times talking about save our jobs in our newsroom, while their coverage repeatedly craps on businesses big and small. While their newspaper endorses and supports the Democratic politicians who go to Olympia and pass $14 billion in new taxes, mostly on the backs of businesses. Then they're like, oh, screw those businesses, screw your business, screw Amazon. But, oh, our business is struggling. Prop us up. Give us $28 million in grants. Our subscribers are way down. Have you ever thought to, I don't know, look in a mirror, really ask yourself, be introspective. Why is our business model not working anymore? What are we doing wrong? Of course they don't. They have no interest in doing that. They want to force people to fund them. And he takes a shot in there at Amazon. Takes a shot in there at Amazon, and the tech companies would have to pay this fee that would contribute. You know how shitty you know how horrible your newspaper has been to Amazon? Are you kidding me? oh my gosh, we should have pulled every news article they've ever done. Consistently, the Seattle Times has done hit piece after hit piece after hit piece after hit piece on Amazon. And now you want Amazon to fund the survival of your newspaper? If I were Amazon, I would be like, kick rocks. Why would they ever do that? I mean, the hit pieces that the Seattle Times runs on Amazon are just totally manufactured outrage sometimes. They'll find one employee who doesn't like working for Amazon. And they'll do this whole feature on them and this big expose on Amazon. Well, that's half of what the Seattle Times does. And then they have the audacity to send the president of their company to Olympia to beg for money from Amazon. It's insane to me. And I've said my goal in life is to bankrupt the Seattle Times. But Democrats, they want to keep the Seattle Times and other legacy publications open and running. Why? Because they're not critical of them. Because they endorse them. Because they support their campaigns. Because they give them lax coverage on other horrible policies. And because the Seattle Times would much rather print bad stuff about Donald Trump than look at what's actually happening in the city and the state that they're supposed to serve and blame the people who are really responsible. Of course, this is a symbiotic relationship. You scratch our back, we'll scratch yours. You give us favorable coverage, we'll give you $28 million in grants. It's absolutely outrageous. Back to that crazy editorial the Times ran as it's crapping on us. Speak up for local news, Washington. Washingtonians have long supported their local press. It's a core value in the state and part of its fierce commitment to robust democracy, open government, and accountability. Gee, you know what would help with open government and accountability? If you open up the doors and don't shut out independent media, but I digress. That lifeline is Senate Bill 5400. The measure would add a tax surcharge on large search engines and social media platforms, reflecting a small portion of the value they derive from trustworthy news content. This would raise around $24 million that will be distributed annually to newspapers, broadcasters, and websites producing local journalism. Yes, the Seattle Times would benefit, but so would smaller news organizations in every corner of the state. And the opening line, when they say Washingtonians have long supported their local press. Okay, yeah, I mean, we have a lot of people who support this show. We would not be able to have a show without it. But more people subscribe to us every day, not fewer. And that's right now what's happening to the Seattle Times. I saw an estimate, and I can't speak to the accuracy of this, but I heard at an event someone saying they have like 60 to 80,000 subscribers. The Seattle Times. That's insane. That is so low. And yes, I mean, you have all this availability of other news content. So there was competition. Competition entered the marketplace and people chose someone else. And now you want to force them to not have that choice. When you are open by saying Washingtonians have long supported their local press, that support has been voluntary. Voluntary support. And you want to say, well, okay, if they want to take that voluntary support away, we'll make it mandatory. They go on to say, government has long played a role in ensuring the survival of the press without compromising its independence. That began with the Postal Act of 1792 that subsidized the delivery of news. The founding fathers had gripes with various publications, like all politicians do, but they knew that a strong and free press was essential to democracy and must be supported. Legislators can't solve that alone, but they can make a difference by passing Senate Bill 5400. Let them know this is important and urgent. So here again, the Seattle Times is advocating for itself and for a piece of legislation while they're saying I can't have a press pass because I advocated for no boys and girls sports. So the hypocrisy there is staggering, of course. But when they use the example of the Postal Act, I mean, it just shows you how outdated they are. Even if you were to believe, you know, that that really is about making sure people get their newspapers, in 1792, there weren't other options. You couldn't get the news any other way. And now there are a bevy of options. And even the Postal Service, frankly, is getting pretty obsolete. So there's a lot of ways that people can get their news, I'm sorry, without having a subscription to the Seattle Times, without supporting the Seattle Times. You just don't want to go out of business. And I get it. You know, running a business is hard. I don't want to go out of business either. But if you start to do poorly as a business, sometimes you have to evaluate what you're doing wrong and also evaluate the business environment that's making things more difficult for you. And the Seattle Times, you have contributed to a bad business climate. And there's a lot of ways that a bad business climate can hurt a newsroom. Chief among that, well, two things. Washington is more expensive than ever for people. You've supported all these taxes and all these things, all these woke, this woke agenda, climate agenda, sucking money out of people's pockets every month at the gas pump. And people are strapped for cash. What's the first thing you do when you're strapped for money? You cancel subscriptions that you're not using. And it happens to us not infrequently. People cancel our subscription. They send us a note and just basically say, look, money's tight. I can't afford it right now. And we totally get that. But that's a reality that Seattle Times is facing too. People can't afford a subscription because Washington is so expensive. Why is Washington so expensive? Because Democrats that are in power, Democrats that Seattle Times helped get into power, maybe they should reevaluate that. And then the bad business climate. $14 billion in new taxes, most of it on the backs of businesses. You know what that, you know what businesses look to cut? Advertising, marketing dollars. And that's one of the biggest line items for revenue for an entity like the Seattle Times. It costs like $12,000 to take out a full page ad in the Seattle Times. And that was as of like 3 years ago. I'm sure that the cost has gone up. Well, fewer businesses can afford that because taxes are so damn high. And so you're sitting here in Olympia with, he looks dumb doing it. Frankly, I don't know the president of the Times. He sounds like a moron doing it because your newspaper has contributed to all these things that you're complaining about. And not anywhere in there did he take an ounce of accountability for why the Seattle Times might be doing so poorly and say, hey, you know, we're really going to work on improving our product, giving people something that they believe is valuable. Now, let's force the big bad tech companies to keep our newsroom, our failing newsrooms afloat. Insane. You know what? Just because I should have done it. The Seattle Times is trash. That's where it belongs, in the dustbin of Seattle history. I will not stop. I will not relent until the Seattle Times goes bankrupt, because it is what's best for the state of Washington. All right, coming up next, wow, that story we did on the wrestler, Callie Keeler, yesterday, it has just gone everywhere, and understandably so. We're going to have a follow-up on that and some concerning things happening to these girls who are starting to speak out for themselves. But first, our friend Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com is the guy you want to talk to if you're looking to sell your home. We talk a lot about his Listing Boost Concierge service, but there's a lot of other services that Wes Jones and his team offer. First of all, every listing that he sells is pre-inspected. He takes a proactive approach to preparing listings, and over 90% of buyers on his listings use the pre-listing inspection. This often allows folks to waive the inspection contingency, which reduces renegotiations, repair requests, and contract fallout. He says he's been doing it for about 10 years, and it has significantly improved the outcomes for his clients. And I think that's a cool thing, too, is you're just getting out of the way problems that might arise down the road. And so he's doing that up front, pre-inspection, and then you kind of have a little more confidence going into closing that things are going to work out okay. So additional consumer-friendly policies that Wes and his team have, flexible commission options, 24-hour cancellation, no long-term contracts, and a lot of other things too. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right. We aired an exclusive story, as you know, yesterday on Patreon and Locals. The headline, teen athlete says she was sexually violated by a trans wrestler and the school district did nothing. The story is about a young woman named Callie Keeler, who wrestles in the Puyallup School District. One of her opponents turned out to be a biological boy, and just a ton of response to this online overnight and to Callie sharing her story. Now, I'll respond to a few, you know, I guess criticisms that I expected to come up, especially from people who don't actually read the story where we answer all of these criticisms. But there's a lot of people online, I guess it's so weird that this is the first thing that pops into people's minds, who says, well, she should have walked off the mat. She should have walked off the mat and refused to wrestle. She didn't know it was a boy. And that's one of the big issues. Yes, as a lot of people brought up, co-ed wrestling in the United States, especially you know, before college and pro, is fairly common. I mean, even Callie said when she was in elementary and middle school, it would be fairly common to have co-ed because there just weren't that many female wrestlers. But they knew it was co-ed. They knew if they were wrestling a boy that day, and they could have made a choice to do it or to not do it. Then when you get to that high school level and people develop and puberty and all these things, boys are just on a different level. They just are. And that's why this biological boy, who's 190 pounds, is a freshman and is already making it to state this year, beating out girls who are older and more experienced because he's a boy. He's just built different, right? So I did want to react to that and say, if she had had a choice, maybe she wouldn't have wrestled. But to her, it wasn't readily apparent that this was a boy, and her coach didn't tell her. Her coach didn't know. And it wasn't until after the match and after she felt like she'd been sexually violated that an opposing coach came up to her and said, I want you to know that that's a boy. So I want to get that thing out of the way. There's also the element of, you know, people saying, well, you know, this is wrestling. You get touched in wrestling, as we expressed in our article. And again, I encourage you to go read it if you haven't done so already. She said this has never happened to her. And we spoke to two experts with nothing to do with this wrestler or the situation who said this is very, 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 very rare. So again, I would encourage you to go read that. Teen athlete says she was sexually violated by trans wrestler and the school district did nothing. Now, we are, of course, actively monitoring what happens in this case. We know there's a criminal investigation going on by the Pierce County Sheriff's Office that is looking into the allegations that Callie made back in December that she felt like she was the victim of a sexual assault and at the hands of a boy that she didn't even know it was a boy. And then the fact, of course, that the school district, at least multiple employees, failed to report her claims as required by law. So remember, this isn't the first story that we have done about the Puyallup School District that centered around two male wrestlers on the girls team at Emerald Ridge High School. We did a story back on January 22nd. I just want to remind you of it because it'll lead us into our follow-up, where there was a group of a dozen girls who just were uncomfortable with these two boys using the locker room, claimed they'd come in there and not really change and just be hanging out and sort of staring at them. And they just are over it. They're over it. So they set a meeting with the principal and the vice principal, went to the principal's office to just share their concerns, and they were given like some pieces of paper that explained what gender expression and sexual orientation and gender identity are, and they were given a printout of the Washington Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction's gender-inclusive schools policy, and they were just sort of turned away. And nothing happened. And they were very, very frustrated about it. But on January 22nd, we aired that story. And following the news that these girls, and we didn't name them, right? But it's a school. People know, the other students know what girls went to the principal's office and talked to the principal and the vice principal. So I want to point out that these girls, despite the fact they haven't been named publicly, within the school environment, they're being subjected to a lot of bullying and harassment. They had started an anonymous Instagram account, and the responses to that account are insane. Here's a couple of them. I guarantee y'all no trans women are looking at your premature ostrich-built ass bitches, saying you're a bunch of transphobic pieces of S-H-I-T, saying the fact most of the people who support this stuff are Christian, what happened to loving your neighbor? You guys are hateful, ugly-hearted pieces of S-H-I-T who can block me. Just a sampling of what these girls are dealing with, and it gets worse. They started to hear some rumors that these trans athletes, at least one of them, were riling up friends to perhaps assault and jump the girls. I met with some of these girls last week in private, and I asked if they had any proof that this was going on, and they sent me text messages from the day after we aired the story, messages they were sending amongst themselves and messages they were sending to their parents. One of those messages from Friday, January 23rd, sent by one of the girls to her mother. The trans athletes are saying that we're pissing them off and he's going to try to get our account banned and that we're going to end up in the hospital and stuff. The mom responds, don't be alone. Don't walk alone. Don't go to the restroom alone. Another message dated the day after our story aired from one of the girls to the other, talking about one of the trans athletes. He's saying that we pissed him off. He's going to try to ban our account. We're going to end up in the hospital. I don't think he knows I'm part of it, but he's talking really loudly. They knew that the girls went to the office and complained, and the girls are saying that the school isn't doing anything about this. That the girls have said that they're scared, that they've heard that they're going to get jumped. And the school hasn't done anything in response. I will tell you, you know, we're in receipt of a video that a student took surreptitiously. We don't know the student who recorded the video, but that allegedly purports to be audio of one of these trans athletes, you know, making these threats to basically jump the girls. We've been working for the last couple of days to clean up the audio that's in it because it's very hard to hear. But I will tell you, I sent part of it to the school district this morning out of an abundance of caution because there was part I could make out that seemed to be a pretty clear threat. And I just said, look, you do with this information what you want to do with it, but I feel like we need to get it over to you. And so these girls are dealing with a lot for the simple act of just going to the principal's office to express their concerns that they don't want to be in a locker room with a boy. And it is a shame because they have no... The statewide elected leaders in this state aren't standing up for them at all. Don't care about their feelings. Don't care about anything. They only care about the trans athletes. They only care about protecting trans kids, not protecting the girls. And they feel so alone out there in the world. And so I think they were happy to see, they were disturbed to hear what Callie Keeler revealed on the show yesterday. But this is all happening within the same school district. And I'm sure a lot of this is happening in other school districts in the state as well. But man, I think things are going to come to a head in Puyallup. There are a growing number of girls and parents who have had enough. And they don't want to deal with this anymore. They don't want to send their kids into an environment where they might get jumped for speaking out for their own safety, not wanting to be in locker rooms with boys, especially now a boy who's accused of forcefully putting his hand into a girl's private area. So, I mean, the question really is, what is the school going to do? What can the school do? You know, one, the school can take the concerns seriously. And I hope that's happening now behind the scenes. But this is a state level issue. This can only be fixed now at the ballot box. This can only be fixed in November with the Let's Go Washington initiatives. And it will only be fixed if more sane people come out and support these girls. Because there are so many people who are just quiet about it. How can you be quiet about it when the girls aren't being quiet about it? And when they're putting themselves out there and they're risking their safety and their security. I mean, I don't know how you can be quiet about it anymore. So we have to stand up for these girls. We'll be monitoring the situation at Puyallup closely. We have some other follow-ups that we're working on. I'm just really proud of Callie for coming forward in the way she did, you know, on camera, explaining what happened. And now there's a lot of people nationally paying attention as well. All right, I wanted to play a clip of our interviews from Sundays with Subscribers this week because this is the definition of government overreach. When you get a government that is just growing by the day, they're growing by the day, they're spending more money, they've got to try to show some justification for it. And man, is the Department of Ecology doing that. So there is a farmer north of Spokane, little farm, tiny farm, multiple generation family farm. His name is Bob Greif. Sweetest man. He's 85 years old. He's still doing this. 85 years old. And he's still at it, just like his father before him. And his ancestors over in Germany. They were farmers there too. And he's just trying to make enough of a living for him to survive. Now, Bob is currently being fined by the state of Washington over a water rights dispute. The Department of Ecology had put something out about this, and it's so fascinating because when you actually hear the story, it makes this press release just that all the more egregious because they seem so proud of it. Like they're announcing in this press release, Spokane County farmer fined $100,000 for repeated illegal water use. And it's like, yeah, look what we're doing as the big bad government. And then you read the fine print and you find out how dumb this is. First of all, you find out it's just a little 85-year-old farmer. He doesn't even have that much land, doesn't even have that many crops. And he's 85 freaking years old. And then you read into the fine print, they're saying, oh, he is a bad guy, repeat offender. So it kind of gets confusing if you don't know water rights issues. But basically, if you run a farm, you might be able to pump water out of a water source that's nearby. In Bob's case, it's a stream, and you get a certain amount of water that your water rights allow you to use to water your crops. And he says for decades, there's a road that goes down the middle of his property. He says for decades, they've been watering the crops on both sides of the road. But for some reason, Ecology came in and said, nope, you can only water the crops on this side of the road, but we're not going to give you permission to water them on that side of the road. And Bob Greif's like, well, I have to water those crops. If I don't water those crops, I won't have crops there and I won't have a farm and I won't have a livelihood. And so instead of working with him at all, trying to figure out, you know, how do we get around this issue, they just started fining him, hit him with that $100,000 fine, and they have a lien on his property. They now have a lien on his farm and are threatening to take his farm away. We spoke with Bob Greif on Sundays with Subscribers. So you've now been fined $121,000, and Ecology has placed a lien on your farm if you don't pay that. So what do you plan to do? What are your options?
I'm going to irrigate come May. And I'm going to stand on that property until they drag me off.
And you have no intention of paying those fines, correct?
Well, that's outrageous for something that, I mean, it's not their water and it's not my water. It's everyone's water and nobody's complaining but them. And they don't have anything to complain about. There's plenty of water in the stream, and I own the property where I'm applying the water, whether it is all put on the north side or distributed on the south side of the road.
What will you do if they try to take your farm away, though?
Well, I don't know. We'll find out.
Yeah. I mean, for you, though, there's no option, because whether you, if you choose to just not water, I mean, you lose your farm anyway, won't you? I mean, you won't be able to make enough money.
Well, I wouldn't make much money, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. What would you say to the state of Washington, to the Department of Ecology?
I don't have anything to say to them. I think they're crazy, but then that doesn't, they got thick skin, I guess.
Yeah, they are crazy. And look, I understand that the water rights issue is a legitimate issue. You need to make sure there's enough to go around for everyone that needs it, upstream, downstream, whatever it is. But he is not the key here. And we've reached out to the Department of Ecology to ask some key questions, and they have never responded to us. We reached out to him several weeks ago and have given them opportunities to do so. He's only using the amount of water he's allowed to use. And the argument he's making, and that I would also make, is if he decides to use half of it on one side of the road and half of it on the other side of the road, why does it matter if he's using the same amount of water? So you're saying he could use all of that, but only on one side of the road, just drown the crops on that side and just leave these ones just dry to die. And I also have to say, without being too macabre, he's 85 years old. You're telling me, state of Washington, that the best use of your resources at the Department of Ecology is to put a lien on the home of an 85-year-old farmer. I don't think Bob will take offense with this, but I mean, how much longer is he going to be farming? And you're going to what, put him out on the streets, homeless, at 85 years old? His dad has been watering that, had been watering that side of the road back, like going back to the 50s and 60s. This is big government at its worst. And they're sitting here bragging about all this fine that we're going to, you know what? I think the people of the state of Washington who would get that money in the general fund if you collect that fine, we're happy to waive it. We're happy to waive it in this instance. Big government at its worst. If you want to watch that full interview on Sundays with subscribers, become a subscriber. It's up right now, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Well, spring's coming. He's watering the state of Washington. I don't know. We might have to go create a human barricade. Is that against the law? Yeah, I think so. But that's okay. Human barricade to stop the state of Washington from coming to take his farm. We'll find out. All right, we'll get to our segment, Unbelievable. I'm sure you've seen the video. Students beating up a mom at a protest. It's insane. There's a lot of questions I have, but we'll try to answer as many of them as we can. First, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington, one of our wonderful show advertisers. First of all, it's a great community, I think, for housing providers in Washington, especially at a time when there's so many new laws and regulations and things to gripe about. They have all these events across the state all year long that you could be a part of, meet other housing providers in your area, and talk about maybe solutions to improve the climate that we're in. And then RHA is down in Olympia as we speak, advocating on your behalf. And so becoming a member is just a smart thing to do, so you don't have to go it alone in the state of Washington. RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. Become a member today. Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. All right. Video of a local mom being attacked by student protesters is going viral. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. wild. So these student protests continue to happen. And as we speak, remember, Democrats in Washington state are pushing a bill that would make it an excused absence to go out and protest because they're trying to train the future generation of activists in this country. But these happen. And look, I've said, I believe students have First Amendment rights. The internet needs to stop saying, I don't think students have First Amendment rights. I do. But we have to be, there is reasonable time, place, and manner. When you're talking about kids who parents are entrusting to a school district during the day to be safe, I use the example of you wouldn't let a third grader walk out into the street free on his own. Of course not. So like, where do you draw the line? We were out with out near our studio, Kirkland protesters were walking through the streets. There was a car going like 50 miles an hour right past them with kids packed in it, screaming and hollering. What if somebody had been hit by a car? That happened in Nebraska? So there's a liability and a common sense issue here. And then we have instances like this. So Issaquah students from the high school and the middle school joined together, hundreds of them left class to protest. Now, I'll play the video and then I, you know, have some questions on the back end. But there's a mom that comes there and is filming and kind of asking them, like, why aren't you in school? They beat her up. Here's video our friend Ari Hoffman got his hands on. So you see her there. Oh my gosh! Like, multiple students pulling her hair, spraying stuff on her, throwing haymakers, dragging her. Look how young some of those kids are. Oh my gosh. Play that one more time. Do you see how young some of those kids are watching this? Look at that little girl there with a sign who's kind of caught up in the middle of. Oh my gosh. Look at how young. Oh my gosh. I am just in. Oh my. I mean, mob mentality. These are middle school and high schoolers. And I can tell some of those kids are middle schoolers. Insane. And so the mom eventually, somebody comes in and helps her break free. She's got like stuff all in her hair and she's just totally beside herself. And there had been a cop nearby. And he tells her to sort of, he's calling for backup or whatever it is, but he didn't come and get her from the mob. Somebody else did. She spoke to our friend Jonathan Cho.
And I'm like, do your parents know that you guys are out of school? Somebody bumps into me.
Do not interrupt.
Somebody says like you to me. I get my hair. It just turned violent. So fast. I get my hair pulled. I don't know which way is up.
Get off of her. Get off of her. Get off of her.
I knew that there were police officers there. I saw them just before. I'm waiting on them to come and rescue me from being assaulted. Like, I'm like, how much longer is this going to be? These are a huge safety risk. These are not peaceful protests in any way, shape, or form. I was assaulted today from a peaceful protest. These should not happen. They're currently investigating. They're identifying all of the people who assaulted me. Then they're going to go in and charge these people. From there, I'll file a criminal complaint. I plan to make sure all are held accountable, the school, the police, and the student.
That is so crazy. I don't even know what to say. And I mean, I didn't see the video leading up to it. And I don't know this mom. But I do know that she was there with a friend of ours, ConspiraCookie, on social media who does streaming. And ConspiraCookie was there. And I know it's kind of, I don't even know if I know her real name, honestly. But I don't believe if this mom had gone in there and like instigated or thrown a first punch at kids or whatever it is, I think that she would have said so. So I don't think she would have hidden that. And I just don't believe that that's what happened. Now, I don't know what was said. I don't know what might have been said leading up to that, but that was clearly a mob mentality situation. So, and that's not the only thing that happened. Obviously, it's the most serious thing, but Issaquah Middle School put out a statement about this to families saying, I want to make you aware that today a group of our students participated in student organized and led walkouts in response to concerns related to ICE. They said at around 9:50 in the morning, 100 Issaquah Middle School students left our building and joined 250 Issaquah High School students. Together, they walked down 2nd Street to the City Hall area. Administrators and school staff did not lead or participate in the event, but were present to supervise and ensure student safety on and near the campus. Well, student safety, what about everyone else's safety. It says district leadership and school security remained in contact with city officials and law enforcement. They say around lunchtime, students began to return for the day, but they did acknowledge in here, during the protest, we received reports of items being thrown into the street, reportedly bags of ice that may have been taken from nearby stores or gas stations. So the kids might have been in at these gas stations stealing bags of ice so they could throw them into the street, as well as a separate physical altercation requiring intervention from the Issaquah Police Department. At this time, we're not aware of any serious injuries. While our students have First Amendment rights to assembly, both under the U.S. and state constitutions, we will continue to encourage them to conduct themselves peacefully and respectfully when exercising these rights. So I mean, obviously there's a police investigation that will get to the bottom of what happened with that mom. But I mean, I see in the video, I don't see her punching back. I see a kid that's got a handful of her hair and will not let go. I see a couple haymakers being thrown. And so we will absolutely follow up and see what happens in terms of any sort of criminal probe. But that's terrifying. And we wonder why. Remember, we did the interview with that mom who went and yanked her child out of school because there was an anti-ICE protest outside. And she said it was because she was scared for her daughter's safety. Because she pulls up to the school as a mom, parks, and they're booing her. Like, they mob in unison booing her. And this is the kind of stuff she was worried about. When you get a mob of kids out there all spun up because whatever they were indoctrinated on by their teachers and their families. And look what happened to an adult. So what do you think would happen to a kid who maybe isn't in support of the protest or isn't participating in the protest? This stuff has absolutely gone too far. That is wild. Can you imagine being beat up? I mean, I've been beat up by Antifa. Can you imagine being beat up by a group of kids?
Right.
That's almost scarier because you can't really hit the kids back. I mean, and what do you do when you're being assaulted by kids? I'm not going to punch a kid in the face unless it's like life or death situation.
I'm
blown away.
When you have long hair, it's hard to get out of that.
That's why
they get a good grip.
Yes. Side note, that's why I always wonder why NFL players will allow their hair to flow out of their helmet. I'm like, you're just asking for it.
Right.
But oh my gosh, I'm just watching that video. That's wild. Middle schoolers. All right. Coming up next, Washington State Democrats have passed the millionaire's tax out of committee. That means it's heading to the floor of the Senate for a vote. And that means that this thing is going to get across the finish line. We'll discuss. First, are we in a tech bubble? Are we in an AI bubble? Do you know how AI and the future of AI could impact your retirement portfolio? Those are some good things to know. And getting a second opinion on your retirement portfolio, something as important as that, that's just a good idea. Our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital can help you out with that by giving you a free Know Your Risk portfolio review. During it, he can ask questions about how your portfolio is positioned, given, you know, AI and tech and what's happening. Tech layoffs, also something to consider. They'll also discuss how Bulwark Capital is focused on risk management and how they incorporate value-based principles in managing retirement portfolios, plus a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. So go to knowyourriskpodcast.com. You can do a couple things while you're there. Subscribe to Zach's daily market recap just to stay informed on what the markets are doing, and then schedule your free second opinion, your Know Your Risk portfolio review. knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right. So the Senate Ways and Means Committee has passed the millionaire's tax out of committee. And that was the committee that had a hearing on it on Friday. But remember, there's two versions of this bill, the income tax on millionaires, House Bill 2724 and Senate Bill 6346. And basically, they'll do that. You know, both parties do this, but they'll do that so they can see which bill makes it out of which chamber, kind of in the best format, so to speak. And so the Senate version, 6346, is going to be, before we know it, heading to a vote on the floor of the Senate. And they would not pass it out of committee unless they knew they had the votes on the floor of the Senate to pass it. And if they got the votes in the Senate, they sure as hell have the votes in the House. And we already know Governor Ferguson supports the idea of an income tax on millionaires, although he's had a little disagreement with their not being enough offsets on taxes for businesses, etc. But look, this is like, you don't shoot your shot for something like this unless you know it's going to land. And so they knew months before the session that they had the votes and that they have the votes on the state Supreme Court to be able to get this thing through and make it stick. So I guess that to say, I don't know if there's anything we can do to stop it at this point. We're sure as hell going to try. And of course, there'll be a voter initiative. There'll be legal challenges and all of this. So we're going to try and we're going to point out all the problems with it. I do want to note one update on this. before we get to dismantling some lies about the millionaire's tax and what the money will go for. Remember we played on the show yesterday? So this millionaire's tax in the hearing on Friday broke the record for the number of citizens who signed in against any bill in Washington state history. So 61,000 people signed in con. And you just register online and say, give them your address and say, I'm not in support of this. And that was huge. And we talked a lot about that. And we said on the show yesterday, my old friends at Fox 13 totally uncritically just played a clip of an activist claiming that those weren't real citizens, those were bots.
A lot of those 50,000 people were bots, potentially.
Okay, potentially. There's no proof of that that we've seen. We reached out to the highest ranking Democrat who sits on the Senate Ways and Means Committee, and that is Senate Majority Leader Jamie Peterson. And he responded to Nicole. He said, I've heard that claim, but I do not have any evidence to support it. So anyone who's making that claim, whether it be Democratic lawmakers or random activists who are given a platform on Fox 13 News, even the guy who loves the millionaire's tax and is a big part of pushing it, says, I don't have any evidence to support that. So the bot claim is ridiculous. It's just because they're mad that that many people don't want an income tax on millionaires. All right. I also want to debunk some of what's being said about where the money that comes in from the income tax on millionaires will go. Now, this morning, I very proudly took my ballot and I marched up to a ballot drop box and dropped it in with some big fat no votes on school levies. Because I'm sorry, I'm not giving school districts any more money until the teachers union stops acting like deranged lunatics and until they acknowledge that schools actually have way more money than they've ever had. And they have fewer students and more staff. And they've doubled the amount they spend per year per pupil. And so they're pleading poverty when it's not true. It's just not true. There's literally no statistic or number that they can point you to that shows that they have less money now than they have had in previous years. So if they want to get more money by lying, I'm not giving it to them. And plus, our outcomes in public school are horrible. So why am I going to fund something that's just not working? So I very proudly, boop, dropped my ballot in with a little no on it. But one of the big groups, I guess, advocating for the millionaire's tax are the teachers' unions and educators, because they're saying, oh my gosh, we need this money coming in to be able to fully fund public schools. They always use that whenever they need something because people are saps and they'll be like, oh, it's for the kids. So here's a teacher, a Rogers High School teacher from Spokane, Rogers High School in Spokane, who testified about needing the income tax because, oh my gosh, schools like hers aren't getting enough money.
My name is Kelly Diamond. I'm a public high school teacher in Spokane, Washington at John R. Rogers High School. Rogers is located in the poorest zip code in Washington state. In the 10 years I've taught there, we've had 75 to 85% free and reduced lunch, 25% of students receive special education services, 15% are multilingual language learners, and of course, impossible levels of trauma that impact students in poverty. The last 7 years, education share of the state budget has consistently decreased, resulting in less spending and supports for teachers and students. At the same time, our class sizes have increased to impossible levels. We are losing teachers and support staff due to both funding and mental health crises. Our job is impossible. 30 students in a class, 150 impossible. Daily. There are simply too much to do for too many students with high needs and too little help. Education in Washington cannot go with less. The millionaire's tax will help bridge the divide between extreme wealth in our state and the realities of education in schools like mine. Thank you.
Okay, so there's a lot of just lies in there that I'll debunk in a moment. One thing she said is true, and it sounds really scary, when she said the percent of the state budget that goes to education has shrunk in recent years. The percentage. And that sounds like, oh gosh, we're not giving them as much money. No. Our budget in spending has just ballooned that much. The both of them, spending overall and spending on education, have far outpaced inflation and far outpaced population growth. And so they're both growing like a weed. But the budget has grown even faster. And so, yes, education is a smaller percentage of the overall budget, but the education budget has also ballooned past the rate of inflation, past the rate of population growth, as we'll discuss momentarily. But play that little clip where she's talking about the last 7 years quick.
The last 7 years, education share of the state budget has consistently decreased, resulting in less spending and supports for teachers and students. At the same time, our class sizes have increased to impossible levels.
Well, unfortunately for her, all of this information is available online. And it's very easy to fact check what she's saying. So she goes to Rogers High School. We can go online and we can see that at Rogers High School, the per student spending at her school alone has increased 17% above the rate of inflation. They now spend $20,000, $20,521 per pupil per year. And that's 17% above the rate of inflation over that period that she discussed. So that's just a lie. Second claim, she talks about how funding for teachers, oh my gosh, teachers, we're just not getting any money. Well, your salary is also public, ma'am. Kelly Diamond, there it is. Yes, her salary has also increased dramatically from $81,000 in 2020 to $111,000 in 2024-2025, also 17% above the rate of inflation. So her salary is growing faster than inflation. So she quite literally has nothing to complain about, and what she's saying in that testimony is a lie. We also know generally, as these claims come up, student enrollment is plummeting. Student enrollment in Washington State is almost back to 2010 levels, which is astonishing. So when she's saying, oh, our classrooms and oh my gosh, our class sizes, you have fewer students. What are you even talking about? Well, maybe you're saying, Brandy, well, they've probably lost staff. No, they haven't. Number of staff members has gone up. Number of total employees and total teachers has gone up while student enrollment goes down. So you actually have more employees, more teachers, fewer students. And then, of course, if you need it in an easy to understand chart, total revenue per student, per pupil. In 2010, we were spending about $10,000 per pupil. In 2022, we were spending about $18,000 per pupil. And now that number is even higher. As I said, in her school in Rogers, they're spending $20,000 per pupil. Way above the rate of inflation, way above the rate of population growth. So literally when they say, oh my gosh, we have less money for more kids, bigger classrooms, less staff, none of that is true. And the numbers are just very, very easy to understand. And the spending. So this chart's really helpful. And again, this is the state's own data. So it's not like we're just manufacturing things to make it look really bad. If you're watching the show today, you'll see the green line. So this is spending per pupil. It's gone up 110%. It's now on average $20,300. It's gone up 110%. Over that same period of time, inflation has been about 35% from 2013. So this is the last 13 years. So spending per pupil far outpacing inflation. And then at the same time, I always love to compare this. The more money we spend, the worse they do in reading and math. The more money we spend per kid, the worse they do in reading and math. So actually, if we're being logical in following the data, if I invert that, the data would tell me that actually, in order to get better outcomes, we should be spending less money because the opposite is true. So maybe we should spend less money and see if kids do better. So just reject the argument that the millionaires' tax is for the kids because they think that's the most sympathetic argument. It's just totally manufactured. And also, there is no line item in the millionaires' tax that dedicates a certain percentage of it to education. It goes into the general fund. I think there's like 5% carved out for public defenders, but everything else goes into the general fund. And yes, a big chunk of the general fund goes to education, but there's nothing saying they have to spend a dime of the millionaire's tax revenue on education. Lies, 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 lies. Big Pinocchios. It's horrible. And in the meantime, as the millionaire's tax charges forward, we know what the impact is going to be when they pass it, and it will be that millionaires either leave the state or they domicile elsewhere, and they find a creative way to try to avoid paying 9.9% of their earnings to state government that then is going to turn around and squander it. But remember at the beginning of the session, I asked State Representative Tim Ormsby, who's the head on budget for Democrats in the state house, about these very real concerns of capital flight. Here's what he said.
I have no problem. I can look myself in the mirror and my constituents in the face if we're taxing a certain percentage of over $1 million. And as you pointed out, it is not going to change anyone's lifestyle at that level. I think the idea that we have capital flight, I have not seen any evidence of that whatsoever.
To which I said, what about Jeff Bezos? Jeff Bezos saved nearly $1 billion that he would have paid in Washington's capital gains tax by moving to Miami. And I brought that up and he said, well, that's one example. That's a pretty big example. And we also know that a very similar thing is happening right now in California. So we can just look at California as an example. As you know, this November, they're going to vote on a tax on billionaires. That would be like a one-time 5% tax on people who have more than $1 billion. And what has happened since they started talking about doing that? The billionaires are leaving California. Because of course that's going to happen. And they were leaving, by the way, California even before this. I mean, look at Elon Musk. But now you have a ton of them leaving. And the latest casualty for California and for California's tax revenue is Mark Zuckerberg. Mark Zuckerberg, according to the Wall Street Journal, the latest California billionaire to buy a house in Florida. He's moving to a nice neighborhood in Miami, spending about $200 million on a house there so he can get the hell out of California. It says Zuckerberg is the latest tech billionaire to descend on Miami as California proposes a 5% billionaire tax. Florida offers no state income tax, which for billionaires like Zuckerberg and Bezos adds up to millions of dollars. Real estate agents in South Florida say they have been working nonstop showing properties to Californians since the possibility of the new tax was announced. Interesting. If there's no such thing as capital flight, why are they working overtime, showing houses to billionaires who say we're leaving California because we don't want to pay the billionaires tax? Now, let's just copy and paste that on our millionaires tax. It does not take a rocket scientist to know what's going to happen. And we have had individuals on this show. We heard from individuals in public testimony on Friday that are saying, I will just move out of the state. I'll move my business out of the state. I'll find a creative way and I won't pay this tax. And what happens when the millionaires don't pay the tax at the rate that politicians are expecting them to? They don't make as much money. Well, they've already spent the money they thought they were going to make, so they're going to come to you to make it up. And that's why the income tax on millionaires will become an income tax on everyone. So even if you believe in the tax the rich pay their fair share, just know, please know, that it'll be that way for a couple years, and then it'll be you paying the share that they wouldn't pay because they moved out of state. I told you so. And I hate it that in 6 years I'm going to come back and have to say that again. Told you so. It'll probably take 6 years for that to happen, but it is going to happen. And it would be foolish to believe otherwise. All right, we'll get to our subscriber poll and comments coming up next. First, I have encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. Wonderful company, definitely shares our values, and they treat our viewers and listeners phenomenal. One of the best parts of the First Mark Challenge is it just takes a little bit of time. You never pay anything for First Mark services at all, but also to do the First Mark Challenge. And you just come away from it knowing for sure whether you have the right insurance at the best price. For some undivided viewers and listeners, they've done the First Mark Challenge and found out that actually their current insurance is great and they shouldn't change it, which is a little peace of mind. And others have saved thousands of dollars a year. And the consistent thing I hear from them is, Brandy, why didn't I do this sooner? And I'm like, I don't know. I've been telling you about it. Rennell, Debbie, Connie, all undivided viewers who took the First Mark Challenge and are now saving money as members of the First Mark family. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. So they always have your best interest in mind. All right, let's get to our daily subscriber show poll, shall we? So there is a lot of talk nationally about the SAVE Act, which would require voter ID if you want to participate in federal elections. There's been a lot of arguments against it. We have one of them, the dumbest one of them, coming up in Sanity Check. But I asked you guys on Patreon, Locals, and X, do you support mandating voter ID in order to participate in federal elections, even if it makes casting your own ballot more difficult? So, like, even if you know, oh, well, I'm going to have to at least one time as a mail-in voter go back and show them my ID, or I can't find a form of ID, I've got to go get a new one. So, Nicole, yes or no, even if it's a pain in your, you know what?
Yes.
I know.
Obviously, right? We have to have passports. We have to have enhanced IDs now. We have to have all of these things. I think that to vote is one of the things that we should be able to come up with a plan for getting everyone the ID that they need.
Well, and yes, and that's the thing is, like, it might be a little too, and I get it. I don't ever want to have to go to the DMV or do any of these things, especially if I have to do it right before an election. I can't participate. You know, we want it to be easy to participate, but that would also make it easy to cheat. And mm-hmm. we can't have that. We live in this state where you can just attest and say, yes, I'm a citizen. I promise. Pinky swear. And as we know, sometimes that's not the case. It would also, by the way, you know, negate some of the very vague assertions of election fraud, you know, because right now people are just kind of assuming that there's this level of fraud because we don't have voter ID. So if there's not, okay, let's take care of it and see for sure. 97% of you are saying yes.
I'm surprised. Who's the 3%?
No, I'm not. I can't. I don't. Your votes are secret. So I don't know who the 3% are.
They defended it.
Crafty Grandma Crispy says, the Constitution does not say anything about making things easy. We have become too complacent with the status quo and need to change to save our country. Jay Van often says, I will go through hell and high water to cast my vote. It shouldn't necessarily be easy to vote. I want my vote to count and not to be diluted by ineligible voters who are likely going to vote for more free stuff. And also, I would say, you know, there are some states that still do the vote in person. People will stand in line and not complain for 6 hours. And those are in blue states. So you're saying that that doesn't make it too hard to vote? Mm-hmm. But getting an ID, oh, that's where we draw the line? I'd much rather have to go through the process of getting an ID then stand in line for 6 hours. So it just, they're not consistent on it. James says, not just federal elections, statewide elections, why have different standards? Well, unfortunately, the feds can only force them to do it for federal elections, not for local elections. And I don't think our state will do it for state elections. Richard said, it's the only way to get rid of fraud. Wise Counsel says, absolutely, rules are always inconvenient, but no rules means chaos. Yeah, Since when has a rule been convenient? I don't even like getting my ID out at the grocery store to buy booze. I'm like, digging in my purse because I'm just annoyed by it. But we have to do it. Why? Because it's the rule. It's the law. All right. We'll get to comments from the live stream. Filed suit today over press access. Sorry. Was I supposed to do something? Am I missing something?
No, you're good. I forgot that we had to do a read here. So all good.
Do we?
Oh.
I don't think we do.
Oh, okay.
Come on,
I'm back.
Nicole. You're gonna come
you
back.
Me to be back.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Matthew Cook, our liberty depends on the freedom of the press, and that cannot be limited without being lost. Thomas Jefferson. Amen. I think actually our attorneys put that in the suit. Mm-hmm. Let's see. On the Seattle Times begging the legislature for money like some sad sacks, Lynn Blevins, if they actually did their job and not just promote liberal agenda, maybe they wouldn't be going broke. Admin Scott J, they make me sick. They take our money and then call it journalism when it's activism. Paul, it's like, can you imagine me sitting here advocating for you to have to fund me by force?
Right. I also think that, yes, I get it. They've been around for a long time. So you have to evolve. Your funding has to evolve. You have to figure out how to adjust to the market, the times that you're in. You can't just say, we're going to fail now. So please, give us money.
We want to keep printing off this paper one's reading. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, cancel your print edition. Sorry, cancel the print.
Yeah.
Go to online. Saves you a bunch of money on the overhead.
Yep.
Go to online only, maybe do some more videos, get more into the social media thing.
Figure out the ads.
They haven't modernized at all. Let's see here. Paul, Brandy exposing them, so they took her press pass. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Puyallup ignoring threats against girls. Papa Woody says, for the girl wrestler yesterday, the RCW on what constitutes rape is very clear. She deserves justice. And look, it is about how someone, you know, feels, and they'll have to look into, I think it's probably going to be pretty hard to prove, because if they don't have a clear video and it's wrestling, it's hands-on, but that doesn't mean, that doesn't mean she wasn't violated, and she was tricked into wrestling a boy only for him to allegedly grab her in her, you know, most intimate area. It's just wild. Greg Williams, I'm 47. When I was 12, a girl joined our wrestling team. I trained her. She went on to pin every opponent she faced that year. The boys actually had some respect and were afraid to touch her wrong. Well, I would hope so. And look, if she wants to, that's fine. Mm-hmm. If you agree and you consent to wrestling a boy, great. Good on you, girlfriend. Love that for you. But don't force them to do it. That's That is bizarre. Don't trick them into doing it. Deanne Sanderson, it's horrendous that the school won't protect these girls. On the state threatening to take this 85-year-old's farm. What in the hell? I will literally go buy a bunch of Costco-sized water bottles, and I will sit in his field watering each plant individually all damn summer long if I have to. I won't actually do that, but I bet we get enough people to volunteer with some water trucks or something. John says, find out what developers want his land and what connection they have to people in state and local government. There it is. Kevin Jensen, glad to see you diving into ecology and water rights. Chuck Heller, it's just a land grab tactic. Oh, yeah, and the state of Washington, for pleading poverty, go look how much land they're buying up. Go look how much land they're buying up for no reason at all. Mm-hmm. They bought some land near my husband and I to save a bush animal of some kind, what the hell is it called, a sagebrush bird of some kind.
Really?
Like, literally no reason. Wow. They're just buying up land for millions and millions and millions of dollars. Mm. It's really wild, and it hurts the ranchers, and it hurts the farmers. Let's see, ex-Hawks Ninerm, we have to fight back. The state is becoming, or has become, an authoritarian state. And how do you sleep at night? How do you go home after the department of your day at the Department of Ecology and say, oh, honey, your wife's like, how was your day? Oh, great. I put a lien on an 85-year-old farmer's house. She's like, great job, honey. I'm so proud of you.
And again, he's not using more water than he's supposed to be. He is just distributing it differently than they want him to.
And if Ecology wants to respond to that, they can respond to our email. Because you haven't. So I'm going to take his word for it. Let's see. Also on that story, Chris Lundstrom, depending on how his will is written, the state will screw his family. I agree. On the mom attacked by student protesters, John Thomas says children do not have the same rights as adults. I tend to agree with that. Oli Sasquatch, they're indoctrinating the kids instead of teaching them what they really need to excel in life. Linda, mob mentality. No wonder this generation is so far behind mentally and emotionally. With some exceptions, I know some very smart, sharp, young, responsible young people.
With good parents.
But good parenting is so key. And, you know, I always love the parents who tell us that they proactively tell their kids, if something like this comes up in school, let me know. So the kid knows what indoctrination looks like.
Right.
So they can flag it for themselves. On the teacher testifying on the millionaire's tax bill and lying, Old Sub Sailor, the left politicians just don't care. They want our money, our kids, our property, and our lives. They want us to shut up, comply, and live poor.
Oh, I was just going to say, as far as politicians like that and lies, the Jamie Peterson thing. I mean, he was repeating something that he just heard but has no proof. So that's what bothers me, is that they... whether they start the rumor or someone else does, it's still repeating lies.
Yeah.
And if you can't prove it, so.
Yeah.
It's infuriating.
West Motorsport. So here's my question. Where does all the money from legal cannabis go? Last time I checked, I was still hitting potholes. I get this question like literally once a week.
All the time. We get it all the time.
Doesn't it go to education?
Most, a lot of it.
And then like drug.
Or most.
Some drug, anti-drug treatment stuff. I don't know. I mean, I guess I should be more, because I get that question so often.
We've done a show on it. We did a segment on it, remember?
Yeah, that's right. I just don't remember what the answer was. Matt Schlatek, anyone with two functioning brain cells knows this will become an income tax on everyone in a year or two. I agree. We got to find those people without the two functioning brain cells and help them form a second that they can use to understand that.
Make sure it gets covered correctly. Yes. So when there's some balance and... balance to these lies that are coming out, obviously.
Yeah. All right, Nicole, thank you so much. We'll get to our closing sanity check coming up next. First, our friends at Valentine Roofing want us to let you know that February is Valentine Roofing Month, and it's all about spreading the love. So if you're a Valentine customer, and if you loved your new roof or siding, now is the time to share that level of care with your friends and family. Valentine Roofing is expanding their customer referral program through the end of February. So when you refer friends or family for a new roof or siding, you'll earn your choice of a free maintenance service or a $250 gift card. And as you know, you can be confident when referring your loved ones because every Valentine Roofing customer receives the Valentine experience. Seamless communication, meticulous cleanup, and extra mile service even in winter weather. And they have flexible financing options available with payments as low as $159 a month and zero down. So a Valentine roof is built around everyone's budget. So call them for a free estimate, 206-ROOFING. And if you get that new roof or siding, make sure that you refer your friends in the month February so you can cash in on that referral bonus, which I think is pretty cool. So 206 Roofing. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, let's hear some of these genius reasons. Well, I will say John Fetterman says he supports voter ID. Thank God for John Fetterman. He's getting a lot of crap from it from his own party. But let's hear why, I don't know, Pocahontas doesn't support voter ID.
The SAVE Act is expected to be brought this week to the floor for a vote. Do you support voter ID for elections?
Well, it depends on what you mean by voter ID. When you want to say that everyone has to produce a birth certificate, including women whose married names are not on their birth certificates, that creates a real problem for me.
Well, isn't that just one of the first steps in getting married is getting a new ID?
Actually, it's not getting a new birth certificate, because part of what the SAVE Act does is it says most driver's licenses around the country won't work as an ID, and that creates a terrible problem.
But you need an ID to do just about anything in America. Shouldn't you need one
to vote in
elections?
You don't need a birth certificate. I hope you know that.
Yeah, what she's talking about is the real ID, which all states and all people have been told for how many years now that they need a real ID, because there's issues with states that don't have certain requirements where they'll just give literally anyone a driver's license. So yeah, you need a real ID. You're going to have to go through some steps if you don't have one. But do you think women are stupid? That's what I hear, is that you think women are so dumb that they can't figure out how to get a verified ID after they get married. We're just simpletons, you know? We're just simpletons. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. And if you appreciate the work we're doing, we would appreciate you supporting the show as a paid subscriber. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, and just click on the banner that says, support the show. We'll see you tomorrow.